The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. It's good to practice with you. So yesterday was confidence and humility, these kind of pairs, the pairs around kind of more assertive qualities of mind, more receptive qualities of mind, how they work together. So yesterday, confidence, humility, today, effort and effortlessness. So I was alluding to kind of effort we make in the sit, right? To actually, to feel our feelings, to feeling life, and in a sense renounce the need to understand everything moment by moment, to narrate it, to know its origins, its trajectory, all of this. Take some effort. And evolutionary pressures have exerted very potent effects. We're animals. It's so easy to forget because I wear V-necks, but it's like I'm an animal. I'm an animal, you know? And we're not far from, you know, from chimps. And we love predictable things and pleasure and security, and Nibbana was not at the top of evolution's to-do list, right? Peace, happiness, that's just one lever that evolution pulls. And effort is a major theme in the suttas, because for animals such as ourselves, you know, greed, hate, and delusion is often the path of least resistance, right? Like I joke that my bad habits require precisely zero effort. Zero. Deep growth, in other words, is not always comfortable. It takes energy, and we're renouncing less satisfying forms of pleasure for deeper forms of well-being. And that gesture of renunciation takes effort, especially in the kind of training period, you know, which maybe is our entire life, but there may be a trend towards more effortlessness, but especially as we're establishing a practice, it's like a lot of effort. The Buddha described anger, for example, like that this beautiful phrase, with its honey tip and poisoned root. And we know the honey, we know the poison. To forgo the honey takes effort. Our problematic habits always have some honey. Even the most painful mind states, there's some honey, there's some solace, you know, even in our guilt, even in our self-hatred, there's often like a kind of soothing underbelly to it, the honey. But this path is against the stream, and we're leveraging our effort to renounce. Now, one way that teaching functions is that the teacher says what they need to hear. I don't think my Dharma talks are like purely Matthew-directed pep talks, but it'd be good if I listened, you know? Friend of mine, a Dharma teacher, was like listening to one of his own talks, you know, and his response in listening to it was like, whoa, that guy really sounds like he knows what he's talking about. right? And to actually take our own best advice involves energy. Involves energy. We need to kind of draw down on a finite pool of our energy in order to listen to ourselves, right? And so effort, yeah, effort is very clear. But we can't just be told to bear down. If that's all we ever do, if what we think of as practice is just bearing down the effort side of this dialectic, one of the effects is only b ever bearing down leads us to overvalue willfulness. And somewhere early in my practice, maybe, I don't know, maybe just right as it began, virya and sakya ditti got tangled together. Virya, energetic vigor, the effort side. Sakya ditti, self-view. My effort, the very sense, the kind of like inner sanctum, the imagined headquarters of my effort got yoked to the sense of me, some kind of like deficient being that needed to fiercely exert his will. And my kind of effort and striving was this like total tangle of Dhammachanda, longing for the Dharma, and then conceit, the melodrama of self. And so part of why we have to experiment with this other side of the dialectic of effortlessness is that we must all witness the limits of our willfulness. And so the inquiry, what does effort look like on the other side of your willfulness? What does effort look like on the other side of your willfulness? So part of the emphasis on effortlessness is to actually perceive the selfing in our efforting. But part of effortlessness is just we can't always be told to make more effort. Remember to be mindful, to pay attention, to be present, to let go of cravings, to renounce the honey, to keep choosing the wholesome. It's too much. Tired. I want a nap, right? Too much. That's why I always kind of shudder when I hear some of the sort of mindfulness instructions like that feel like always so effortful. And I just know that's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And it's like, okay, I want to be close to the Dharma right now. I really do. But the only way I can be close is if what I can do is something close to effortless, you know? The only way I can be close is if it doesn't ask a ton of the kind of effort system. And many of the actual fruits as we train, many of the fruits of the practice actually don't require effort to keep up. We develop Dharma habits, traits, and traits are about effortlessness, just like the traits of, greed, hate, and delusion take no effort. We develop good habits, and we begin to entrust our Dharma practice to those good habits. This famous piece from William James says, "So far as we are mere bundles of habit, we are imitators and copiers of our past selves. It follows, first of all, the teacher's prime concern shall be to ingrain into the pupil that assortment of habits that shall be most useful to them throughout life. Education is for behavior, and habits are the stuff of which behavior consists." Goes on to say, "The great thing in all education is to make our nervous system our ally instead of our enemy." It's very, very beautiful to make our nervous system our ally instead of our enemy, right? We maybe say like Dharma, it's about effort, but it's also about making our nervous system our ally. And here we don't go against the stream. We enter the stream, enter the stream. It's kind of strange, two sides of the way stream is used. We're propelled by the momentum of goodness, the effortlessness of awareness, not marshaling the attention. That takes effort to marshal the attention, even if it's just subtle, that takes effort. But there is a quality of the kind of an effortless quality of awareness that we have more access to, effortless access. It doesn't, we don't have to burn attentional caloric calories. The kind of like we there's no attentional burn in awareness. And that's not something we control, but we gain more and more access to that, the kind of deep nourishment of it. And we talk a lot about choice and making choices in Dharma and mindfulness, giving us room to choose these things. But the truth is that making choices is tiring. And in my practice, I don't really notice that I exactly make better choices. It's much more like the menu options are better. That takes less effort. The nervous system is an ally when wholesomeness becomes more pleasurable than unwholesomeness. Not wholesomeness is like some idea, some should, some ought, any of that. No. Wholesomeness actually becomes more pleasurable, right? And the Dharma practice is a kind of behavioral modification where usually we're motivated by honey, but we actually condition ourselves, train ourselves, train the animal of our body to learn from the poison. We get very clear on the poison. We do not blunt the experience of the pain of acting out in this way or that way with unconsciousness. And that begins to the Dharma functions as a behavioral modification program. It begins to create its own natural incentive structure, right? We the pain of being unaligned becomes more poignant. And then letting go feels like less effort than holding on. When love increasingly becomes the kind of default position of the mind, it's hatred rather than love that takes effort. nervous system becomes our ally and our enemy. Offer this for your consideration, and look forward to being with you tomorrow. Okay, folks, thank you.